Chapter 4. Of a nation with which he is now in so strict an alliance. But the other kingdoms and states of Europe have treated me with more candor and generosity. If I had leave to print the Latin letters transmitted to me from foreign parts, they would fill a volume, and be a full defense against all that Mr. Partridge, or his accomplices of the Portugal Inquisition, will be able to object, who, by the way, are the only enemies my predictions have ever met with at home or abroad. But I hope I know better what is due to the honor of a learned correspondence in so tender a point. Yet some of those illustrious persons will perhaps excuse me from transcribing a passage or two in my own vindication. The most learned Monsieur Leibniz thus addresses to me his third letter. Illustrissimo Bickerstaffio Astrologia Instauratori, etc. Monsieur Leclerc, quoting my predictions in a treatise he published last year, is pleased to say, Ida Nuperum Bickerstaffius Magnum Illit Anglii Fitus. Another great professor writing of me, has these words. Bickerstaffius, Nobilis Anglis, Astrologarum Hugis Sicili Facile Princeps. Signor Magliabecchi, the great duke's famous library keeper, spends almost his whole letter in compliments and praises. Tis true, the renowned professor of astronomy at Utrecht seems to differ from me in one article, but it is in a modest manner that becomes a philosopher, as paste and ivori dixerum, and pag. 555 he seems to lay the error upon the printer as indeed it ought, and says, Vel force an error typography, cum liquid Bickerstaffius verdictissimus, etc. If Mr. Partridge had followed this example in the controversy between us, he might have spared me the trouble of justifying myself in so public a manner. I believe few men are readier to own their errors than I, or more thankful to those who will please to inform me of them. But it seems this gentleman, instead of encouraging the progress of his own art, is pleased to look upon all attempts of that kind as an invasion of his province. He has been indeed so wise to make no objection against the truth of my predictions, except in one single point, relating to himself. And to demonstrate how much men are blinded by their own partiality, I do solemnly assure the reader that he is the only person from whom I ever heard that objection offered, which consideration alone, I think, will take off all its weight. With my utmost endeavors, I have not been able to trace above two objections ever made against the truth of my last year's prophecies. The first was of a French man, who was pleased to publish to the world that the Cardinal de Noailles was still alive, notwithstanding the pretended prophecy of Monsieur Bickerstaff. But how far a Frenchman, a papist, and an enemy is to be believed in his own case against an English Protestant, who is true to his government, I shall leave to the candid and impartial reader. The other objection is the unhappy occasion of this discourse, and relates to an article in my predictions, which foretold the death of Mr. Partridge, to happen on March 29, 1708. This he is pleased to contradict absolutely in the almanac he has published for the present year, and in that ungentlemanly manner, pardon the expression, as I have above related. In that work he very roundly asserts that he is not only now alive, but was likewise alive upon that very 29th of March, when I had foretold he should die. This is the subject of the present controversy between us, which I design to handle with all brevity, perspicuity, and calmness. In this dispute, I am sensible the eyes, not only of England, but of all Europe, will be upon us, and the learned in every country will, I doubt not, take part on that side, where they find most appearance of reason and truth. Without entering into criticisms of chronology about the hour of his death, I shall only prove that Mr. Partridge is not alive. And my first argument is thus. Above 1,000 gentlemen, having bought his almanacs for this year, merely to find what he said against me, at every line they read, they would lift up their eyes, and cry out, betwixt rage and laughter, they were sure no man alive ever writ such damned stuff as this. Neither did I ever hear that opinion disputed. so that Mr. Partridge lies under a dilemma, either of disowning his almanac, or allowing himself to be man alive. But now if an uninformed carcass walks still about, and is pleased to call itself Partridge, Mr. Bickerstaff does not think himself any way answerable for that. Neither hath the said carcass any right to beat the poor boy who happened to pass by it in the street, crying, "A full and true account of Dr. Partridge's death," etc. Secondly, Mr. Partridge pretends to tell fortunes and recover stolen goods, which all the parish says he must do by conversing with the devil and other evil spirits. And no wise man will ever allow he could converse personally with either till after he was dead. Thirdly, I will plainly prove him to be dead out of his own almanac for this year, and from the very passage which he produces to make us think him alive. He there says, he is not only now alive, but was also alive on the very 29th of March, which I foretold he should die on. By this, he declares his opinion that a man may be alive now, who was not alive a 12-month ago. And indeed, there lies the sophistry of this argument. He dares not assert he was alive ever since that 29th of March, but that he is now alive, and was so on that day. I grant the latter, for he did not die till night, as appears by the printed account of his death, in a letter to a lord, and whether he is since revived I leave the world to judge. This indeed is perfect cavilling, and I am ashamed to dwell any longer upon it. Fourthly, I will appeal to Mr. Partridge himself, whether it be probable I could have been so indiscreet, to begin my predictions with the only falsehood that ever was pretended to be in them, and this in an affair at home, where I had so many opportunities to be exact, and must have given such advantages against me to a person of Mr. Partridge's wit and learning, who, if he could possibly have raised one single objection more against the truth of my prophecies, would hardly have spared me. And here I must take occasion to reprove the above-mentioned writer of the relation of Mr. Partridge's death, in a letter to a lord, who was pleased to tax me with a mistake of 4 whole hours in my calculation of that event. I must confess, this censure pronounced with an air of certainty, in a matter that so nearly concerned me, and by a grave judicious author, moved me not a little. But though I was at that time out of town, yet several of my friends, whose curiosity had led them to be exactly informed, for, as to my own part, having no doubt at all in the matter, I never once thought of it, assured me, I computed to something under half an hour. Which, I speak my private opinion, is an error of no very great magnitude, that men should raise a clamor about it. I shall only say, it would not be amiss, if that author would henceforth be more tender of other men's reputations as well as his own. It is well there were no more mistakes of that kind. If there had, I presume he would have told me of them with as little ceremony. There is one objection against Mr. Partridge's death, which I have sometimes met with, though indeed very slightly offered, that he still continues to write almanacs. But this is no more than what is common to all that profession. Gadberry, Poor Robin, Dove, Wing, and several others, do yearly publish their almanacs, though several of them have been dead since before the Revolution. Now the natural reason of this, I take to be, that whereas it is the privilege of other authors to live after their deaths, almanac makers are alone excluded, because their dissertations treating only upon the minutes as they pass, become useless as those go off. In consideration of which, time, whose registers they are, gives them a lease in reversion to continue their works after their death. I should not have given the public or myself the trouble of this vindication, if my name had not been made use of by several persons, to whom I never lent it, one of which, a few days ago, was pleased to father on me a new set of predictions. But I think those are things too serious to be trifled with. It grieved me to the heart, when I saw my labors, which had cost me so much thought and watching, bawled about by common hawkers, which I only intended for the weighty consideration of the gravest persons. This prejudiced the world so much at first that several of my friends had the assurance to ask me whether I were in jest, to which I only answered coldly that the event would shew. But it is the talent of our age and nation to turn things of the greatest importance into ridicule. When the end of the year had verified all my predictions, out comes Mr. Partridge's almanac, disputing the point of his death, so that I am employed, like the general who was forced to kill his enemies twice over, whom a necromancer had raised to life. If Mr. Partridge has practiced the same experiment upon himself, and be again alive, long may he continue so. That does not in the least contradict my veracity. But I think I have clearly proved, by invincible demonstration, that he died at farthest within half an hour of the time I foretold, and not 4 hours sooner, as the above-mentioned author, in his letter to a lord, hath maliciously suggested, with design to blast my credit, by charging me with so gross a mistake. A famous prediction of Merlin, the British wizard, written above 1,000 years ago, and relating to the year 1709 with explanatory notes. Last year was published a paper of predictions, pretended to be written by one Isaac Bickerstaff Esquire, but the true design of it was to ridicule the art of astrology, and expose its professors as ignorant or impostors. Against this imputation, Dr. Partridge hath vindicated himself in his almanac for that year. For a farther vindication of this famous art, I have thought fit to present the world with the following prophecy. The original is said to be of the famous Merlin, who lived about 1,000 years ago, and the following translation is 200 years old, for it seems to be written near the end of Henry VII's reign. I found it in an old edition of Merlin's prophecies, imprinted at London by John Hawkins, in the year 1530, page 39. I set it down word for word in the old orthography, and shall take leave to subjoin a few explanatory notes. 7 and 10 added to 9, of France her woe this is the sign, Tamis river twice why frozen, walk sans wedding shoes knee hosen. Then cometh forth, itch understand, from town of Stoff to Farin Land, an hardy chieftain, woe the morn to France, that ever he was born. Then shall the fish buoy isle his boss, nor shall green berries make up the loss. Yon symbol shall again miscarry, and Norway's prid again shall marry, and from the tree where blossoms feel, ripe fruit shall come, and all is weal, realms shall dance hand in hand, and it shall be merry in old England, then old England shall be no more, and no man shall be sore therefore. Geryon shall have three heats again, till Habsburg maketh them between. Explanatory notes. 7 and 10. This line describes the year when these events shall happen. 7 and 10 makes 17, which I explain 1700, and this number added to 9, makes the year we are now in, for it must be understood of the natural year, which begins the 1st of January. Tamis river twice, etc. The river Thames, frozen twice in one year, so as men to walk on it, is a very signal accident, which perhaps hath not fallen out for several hundred years before, and is the reason why some astrologers have thought that this prophecy could never be fulfilled, because they imagine such a thing would never happen in our climate. From town of Stoff, etc. This is a plain designation of the Duke of Marlborough. One kind of stuff used to fatten land is called merle, and everybody knows that borough is a name for a town, and this way of expression is after the usual dark manner of old astrological predictions. Then shall the fish, etc. By the fish is understood the Dauphin of France, as their king's eldest sons are called. 'Tis here said, he shall lament the loss of the Duke of Burgundy, called the boss, which is an old English word for hump shoulder, or crook back, as that duke is known to be, and the prophecy seems to mean that he should be overcome or slain. By the green berries, in the next line, is meant the young Duke of Berry, the Dauphin's third son, who shall not have valor or fortune enough to supply the loss of his eldest brother. Yonch Simnel, etc. By symbol is meant the pretended Prince of Wales, who, if he offers to attempt anything against England, shall miscarry as he did before. Lambert Simnel is the name of a young man, noted in our histories for personating the son, as I remember, of Edward IV, and Norway's pride, etc. I cannot guess who is meant by Norway's pride. Perhaps the reader may, as well as the sense of the two following lines. Realms shall, etc. Realms, or, as the word is now, realms, is the old name for kingdoms. And this is a very plain prediction of our happy union, with the felicities that shall attend it. It is added, that old England shall be no more, and yet no man shall be sorry for it. And indeed, properly speaking, England is now no more, for the whole island is one kingdom, under the name of Britain. Gerion shall, etc. This prediction, though somewhat obscure, is wonderfully adapted. Gerion is said to have been a king of Spain, whom Hercules slew. It was a fiction of the poets, that he had three heads, which the author says he shall have again. That is, Spain shall have three kings, which is now wonderfully verified. For besides the king of Portugal, which properly is part of Spain, there are now two rivals for Spain, Charles and Philip. But Charles being descended from the Count of Habsburg, founder of the Austrian family, shall soon make those heads but two, by overturning Philip, and driving him out of Spain. Some of these predictions are already fulfilled, and it is highly probable the rest may be in due time, and, I think, I have not forced the words, by my explication, into any other sense than what they will naturally bear. If this be granted, I am sure it must be also allowed, that the author, whoever he were, was a person of extraordinary sagacity, and that astrology brought to such perfection as this, is by no means an art to be despised, whatever Mr. Bickerstaff, or other merry gentlemen are pleased to think. As to the tradition of these lines, having been written the original by Merlin, I confess I lay not much weight upon it. But it is enough to justify their authority, that the book from whence I have transcribed them, was printed 170 years ago, as appears by the title page. For the satisfaction of any gentleman, who may be either doubtful of the truth, or curious to be informed, I shall give order, to have the very book sent to the printer of this paper, with directions to let anybody see it that pleases, because I believe it is pretty scarce. Dr. John Arbuthnot and Alexander Pope, Annus Mirabilis. Or, the wonderful effects of the approaching conjunction of the planets Jupiter, Mars, and Saturn. By Mart. Scriblerus, Philomath. Innova Ferdinandus Mutatis Disier Formas Corpora. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.